Good afternoon. This is a Senate Resources Committee. We'll call the meeting to order. Let the record reflect it's approximately 3:33 p.m. on this Wednesday, March 9th, 2011. We do have a quorum today. In fact, we have a full committee. Beginning on my right, we have Senator McGuire, Senator French, Senator Wilikowski. From my left, Senator Stevens, Senator Stedman, and co-chair Senator Wagner, and myself, Senator Pascvan. There are two bills on our agenda today, Senate Bill 85 and Senate Bill 49, and we're going to begin today with a brief statement by Senator Wagner on Senate Bill 85.
Yeah, we've decided not to go any further with 85 until we do some modifications to the bill, and we're working on that now, and probably in a week's time we'll have it back before the committee, have something that's easier to model, something a little more understandable, and hopefully a little more acceptable. But we'll work on that, and co-chair and I will work out a schedule of when we can hear the bill again. Hopefully it'll be in a good enough format when we bring it back that probably one or two meetings, we can have some testimony from the companies, and then have public testimony, and then move the bill out. So, but I'll keep you informed.
All right. With that, we do begin today with the important Senate Bill 49, which is the bill relating to the production tax on oil and gas. And I believe it is important that this committee and the public that is likely interested in this bill and hopefully watching us, for example, through gavel to gavel, or now we have the internet, but that the public also has the opportunity to fully understand the content of this bill. And we're going to be providing today the opportunity to the bill sponsor to explain the rationale behind each section of the bill as we prepare for the public policy discussion, which will likely follow after we lay out the components of the bill. I have asked the Department of Revenue, therefore, to walk us through the sectional of Senate Bill 49, and so while we're doing so, I encourage all of the Resource Committee members to ask questions as we do walk through that sectional analysis, so that the committee members, the public, and others that are following this bill know where we're going, at least in the interim. The agenda that we will have, particularly relating to Senate Bill 49, this Friday, we're going to continue with the Department of Revenue in their presentation, focusing upon what their primary goals are in this legislation. Then on Monday, the Department of Revenue will present their January 18, 2011 report to the legislature, which is captioned Oil and Gas Production Tax Status Report to the Legislature. And then also, then on Wednesday, we will have Mr. Lenny Dees from the Department of Revenue will give a presentation on oil tax credits. And as the committee confirms the topic and the presenters for the additional meetings, it is my intent to notify the public of the committee's agenda in advance as far as possible. But given that as a kind of a preface to the presentation, I would now at this time welcome Mr. Brian Butcher, the Commissioner of the Department of Revenue, to introduce Senate Bill 49 to the Senate Resources Committee. And I know that Susan Pollard, Department of Law, Assistant Attorney General with the oil and gas focus is here, or likely may be presenting, so she is welcome to come forward as well, if that's your intent, Commissioner. So,
yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brian Butcher, Commissioner Designee for the Department of Revenue, and I will have a couple of opening comments on the first few slides, and then ask Susan Pollard from the Department of Law to come up and walk through her sectional analysis, and I'll remain at the table for any questions as well. Just very broadly, looking at the main topics of the bill, there are pretty much three primary ones, as well as some smaller ones. The first one, progressivity rates and cap, is one that certainly gotten a lot of discussion in the building as well as in the press, which would be keeping the maximum progressivity, or excuse me, keeping the base rate of the current production tax at 25%, keeping the same progressivity slope, but changing progressivity from what it is now, where each additional dollar of progressivity applies to the entire rest of the barrel, to a progressivity by brackets, very similar to, just to simplify it, how you might look at federal income taxes, where from $0 to $30,000 earned would be, you would pay taxes on 10%, from $30,000 to $40,000 might be at 15%, but as you increase in the amount of money you make, the higher tax bracket you get into doesn't apply to the entire salary you're making. It only applies to each particular bracket. That first $30,000 earned, you're still paying the same 10% that anybody else is paying. So I know I'm jumping from one area to another, but that's kind of how the brackets work. The second major piece of it is under the base tax rate. That has to do with looking at leases or properties that have not been unitized or have not been producing as of the final day of the year 2010. And the base tax rate for those areas would be at 15% rather than 20% to try to incentivize development of areas of the North Slope in particular that have not currently been developed. The under progressivity, the current in law cap is 75%. This bill would cap it at 50%. And under the 15%, fields that haven't been developed, the cap there would be 40%. So it would be the same progressivity slope, just shifted 10% down for areas that haven't been developed. And then the third major change in the bill is to extend the well lease expenditure tax credits of 40% that were extended south of 68 degrees in last legislature to north of 68 degrees to include the North Slope as added incentive. Some of the smaller pieces, and like I said, we'll be walking section by section through this, is tax credits that currently can be claimed in a two-year period. This bill would move it to 1 year, so it would have a negligible effect more or less in the long term. It would increase the dollar amount we'd be paying out and would be applied towards taxes in the first year, 2012, but it would reduce it in the next year, and then it would flatten out. So it would not have much of an effect at all on the state treasury. It also would look at changing the monthly tax calculation to a yearly tax calculation. It's currently in ACES monthly, and so it picks up the high year, or excuse me, the high months. And this would change it to a yearly tax calculation that's not only easier for the department to administer, but easier for the companies as well. And frankly, as we get into more detail on this Friday and next week, and we look at a comparison between a shift from the progressivity as it is now to brackets, you're going to see that it's a pretty small amount that you're looking at in a difference between a monthly and a yearly, just because of the way that the tax is computed through brackets instead of how it is currently computed through progressivity. I'd like to ask Ms. Pollard up here right now, Mr. Chairman, to go in a little bit more detail through the bill.
Senator Pascoe, it's going to take me just a minute here to get my notes straightened out. Is this good? Can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. My name is Susan Pollard. I'm Assistant Attorney General for Oil, Gas, and Mining from the Juneau section. And my goal today is to do a fairly detailed sectional analysis of the bill, just a technical walkthrough. So at the end of this presentation, you'll have an idea of where changes are made from existing law, and you'll have an idea of what each section of the bill is intended to accomplish. Because at certain points I want to point out where we're changing it from existing law, I'll be referring to my own statutes just for that, to make sure that I've got the language correct from the existing statute. I will be following basically the order of the PowerPoint, so it won't be running from Section 1 on down. We will cover every section in the bill, but they'll be covered more by subject area rather than a straight run-through. Otherwise, we'll kind of get into weeds on perhaps the interest rate changes before getting to some of the major components of the bill. Mr. Butcher just showed a slide that shows all the effective dates for the major components, so I'm going to be using that for my general walkthrough. So when we go back one right here, if you look at that slide with the main proposed changes, when we do the progressivity rates and tax cap, we'll be covering sections 8, 9, and 20 of the bill. When we discuss the base tax rate, we'll be looking at section 6 of the bill. I believe that's on page 4. Page 3. Tax credits will be covering about 7 sections, most of them conforming amendments. And then we will go into the interest rate changes, statute of limitations, and very briefly into the effective dates. It is important, I think, just to remember that the default effective date in this particular bill happens to be July 1st, 2011, because of the interest rate changes. And I mostly say that for me, because if there are any amendments, it's just important to be really careful with the effective dates, because there are 3 or 4 different effective dates in this bill. There are 3 major components in this bill: establishment of the incremental rate, incremental progressivity, establishment of a separate rate for base fields, and the extension of last year's well lease expenditure credit to the North Slope. We're going to start with Section 8 of the bill, which begins on your version on page 4. Currently, the tax is levied by 4355-011E, and in Senate Bill 49, that remains the same. But currently, the base rate is levied under E, and then the monthly progressivity tax is paid under subsection G, and it's calculated under G. One of the changes in this bill, as Mr. Butcher mentioned, is that both the base rate of 25% and the incremental progressivity are levied on an annual basis. So we keep the levy of the tax in subsection E, which in your bill is section 6, but all of the tax rate calculations you'll see in subsection 8 of this bill, which is amending current 4355-011G. The progressivity tax is no longer calculated and paid on a monthly basis as it is currently. It's calculated annually, but there is still a requirement that the monthly estimated payments are made based on the base tax rate and the progressivity. So even though the progressivity is going to be calculated annually, there will still be monthly payments. And you see that more in Section 9 of the bill. The incremental rates are set out here.
When you are referencing that at a page, if you could give us the line number so that we can track immediately to where you are,
Absolutely.
So that if, and particularly the members of the public that may be at home, if they have Senate Bill 49 in front of them, that they can immediately stay with you.
Okay. So we are on page 4, and we're looking at subsection G1, which starts on page 12. And what you see in this subsection is an explanation of how the tax rate, both the base tax rate and the incremental progressivity, are going to be applied. You'd calculate the average annual production tax value as you do under the current tax. Then you calculate the fraction of the production tax value that would fall into each incremental progressivity bracket. And then only the value within that bracket is taxed at that higher rate. which is a change from our current system where the highest value dollar percentage applies to all dollars below that. So what you see just technically in the bill is in subsection G1, this applies the progressivity to the all the fields that apply to the that are going to be subject to the 25% rate. Are there any questions on that one so far?
I see no questions so far.
Great. Then if you turn the page, beginning on line 4, page 5, you see the progressivity. You see the instructions for how to calculate the average annual production tax value, how to take the fraction of that value and put it into each progressivity bracket, how to multiply that fraction. And then you see the brackets listed on page 5 from lines 18 through 25. And I believe Mr. Butcherbeck mentioned briefly that this is for the 15% rate, so you can see the progressivity here caps, excuse me, the tax here caps at a 40% rate, whereas up above the production subject to the 25% rate, the tax is going to cap at a 50% rate.
And if I could, Mr. Chairman, the slide in front of you shows the blue line is the nominal rate, tax rate, under the current ACES law. The red line, you can see, follows the same ACES slope, bracketed, which would be for all of the currently producing fields. And then the green line would be the bracketed slope for the non-unitized fields that would start at 15% and cap at 40 instead of starting at 25% and capping at 50.
Would it be helpful to explain the use of the term nominal when one uses the term nominal production tax rates?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. Nominal is simply the number that would appear in the bill, that would appear as not comparing it to real dollars or just comparing it to what the actual number that's applied in legislation would be, which is 25%.
Right, then moving on, and this segues nicely because this does make a change to how the nominal rate is calculated, because it is now just the production within that particular bracket, and that's all set out in Section 8 of the bill. If there are no questions on that section, we will segue into a related section, which I referred to briefly at the beginning. That's Section 9 of Senate Bill 49. That section begins on page 5, line 26. This is also one of the sections I referred to at the beginning where we see a repeal and reenactment because the changes are enough that sometimes when you're drafting, if you're doing the inserts with the brackets and the bolding and underlined, it just gets too confusing to read. And if everybody's there, this section of the production tax covers payment of the tax. So the tax is basically levied under Section 011E, and then some of the payment, then the tax rate is determined under 011G, the governor's bill. And then Section 020 of the production tax gives instructions for how the tax is paid for the monthly installments. And so if you look at this change on Section 9, this takes into account the change of progressivity from the monthly basis to the annual basis, and it instructs the taxpayers that how to make their monthly payments of estimated taxes, how to do the calculations, and how each segment or category of production tax value is reported. You see those segments beginning on page 6, and you'll see those segments again in the section dealing with annual production tax value. So basically, this makes sure that for every area where there's a separate tax value, such as North Slope, Cook Inlet Oil, Cook Inlet Gas, Gas Houston State, the monthly reporting takes that into account.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if this is appropriate time for this sort of question, but do you? I guess what I'd be interested in seeing is what would the impact have been over the last 3 years had we been calculating the ACES payments yearly as opposed to monthly. Do you have a sense on that?
That would be for the Department of Revenue.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilikowski, I believe for 2010 and 2009, it would be just under $100 million less by doing it yearly than doing it monthly. 2008, which was the most volatile year for oil prices in history, was considerably higher. I believe it was around $600 million. So if you were to take it for out 10 years, you would see in the range of $100 million, a couple hundred million on average, with the exception, of course, of 2008.
So just so I understand you clearly, had we had this provision in ACES, the state would have lost $800 million over the last 3 years?
Is that correct? Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, in that volatile year, the state would have brought in, I believe, I probably should check on somebody that might have the details.
Could, yes, sure. And so we would have lost $800 million over the last 3 years, and you project another $100 or $200 million every year for the next decade? Did I hear you correctly?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, a lot would depend on how volatile oil was, obviously. Over the last 2009, 2010, it would have been under $100 million.
And if I could, Mr. Chair, I didn't notice those numbers reflected in your fiscal note. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, yes, it is, because the bill changes from the progressivity as it now occurs to a different way of calculating the tax, and it would be impossible for us to try to look into the future and try to make an estimate on what that might result in. I mean, looking at it under brackets, it would be minimal because of the way it's calculated. It would be more if we left it in the current law, but it would be extremely difficult to try to estimate on a month-to-month basis what was going to happen with the price of oil.
Thank you.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe just from a procedural standpoint, maybe, and this is our first hearing, we're probably going to have more than one, I assume, as we walk through this bill. Going forward, I know there's, you know, been some announcement from you that, you know, we're going to have some upcoming hearings next week. But is the intent here from the administration to go back in the presentation of this bill and present to us why these decisions were made? And we can just pick one: progressivity annually versus monthly. I mean, there's a dozen of these issues in this bill. That was the one that was just on the table. Look at why the policy call was made. And when it was made, either under original PPT, under ACES, so we have the history of that particular issue, and review that record, bring it forward, and explain to the committee now why the state should change the policy because of some deficiency in it or whatever it may be, and take a look at that issue, and then, as you know, go on to a multitude of other ones, or how. I'm just kind of curious on how the administration plans on laying out their discussion points.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, yes, we are planning on doing that. Most of that will be done this Friday. In discussing today's meeting with the chairman, and initially there was a bill up before this and we were going to be limited on time, he asked us to just walk through, for half of the meeting, to walk through the kind of nuts and bolts of it, and we can speak to some of the policy pieces in some of the lesser parts of the bill, but ultimately the larger public policy issues we'll be addressing on Friday.
Can I just add a little
follow
bit?
Up, yes.
Just for the folks watching at home, even though the progressivity term has been in the press now for a few years, as I recall, it was this committee several years ago under the original PPT, along with our colleagues down the hall, House that put in initially the progressivity and part of the tax code, and we did that under PPT because as if you hold a base tax flat 20% at that time or 25% today, you share
of profit oil to the state under advancing oil prices diminish. And that was unacceptable. And we had, as a policy, put in progressivity and neutralized it and then actually raised the government, or excuse me, the state share a little bit as prices advance. And then under ACES, you know, it raised it even more. So I think it's going to be beneficial if we spend some time. I think some of these issues, I think that issue alone would take one meeting, much less some of the other issues in the bill. So we have a thorough review of where we were or where we came from and why these policy calls were made and when they were made, and make sure the public understands. I think the issue that the industry faces today is similar to what the state faced under the initial submission of PPT under the previous Murkowski administration, 20% base tax with no progressivity, that under advancing prices, our percent of profit oil declined. I think that's reversed now, and it's and that's a policy call that we'll have to work on over the next, you know, few months or a year, or however long it takes us to work through this situation. But it's there's a lot of information to go through, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Any questions by others on the committee? And I think that those policy issues, again, need to be fully developed so that we all understand the choices that will have to be addressed. You may continue.
All right, I will continue on then with the walkthrough here. All right, we've done progressivity. All right. The next section of the bill I want to mention, all right, we've shown you the incremental bracketed progressivity in Section 8, the fact that the tax would still be, there would still be monthly payments under Section 9 and how that would be calculated. Because we've added a new segment that is for the 15% tax rate, there has to be a new segment added to the determination of production tax value for oil and gas. You're going to see that on your bill in Section 20, and that up here starts on page 13. And once again, this is one of those sections that is repealed and reenacted for to make it easier to read, and actually on this particular section, to get a little bit of cleanup in. There are some tax ceilings that will expire in 2022 that weren't really taken into account the way current 4355-160 is structured, but that are taken into account in this repeal and reenactment. The basic rules for determining the annual production tax value remain the same. There's no change here. What we're doing here is adding some additional segments. Or segments is a term I think used by the Department of Revenue and in the regulations. It's not in the legislation. You just have a separate category of production tax value that has a different tax treatment. You'll see those particular new categories added beginning on page 14 of the bill. So what we're doing here is making sure we're including all possible categories of taxation, including the 15% rate, the 25% rate, within both of those rates, anything that's subject to cook inlet ceilings or gas use in state ceilings, and, of course, the minimum tax is considered in the 020 reporting.
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. Could you just refresh me? You referenced the year 2022 in a number of places, line 19, page 13, line 23, line 28. What's the rationale behind that?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, what's the point of the year 2022?
Yeah.
There are some tax limitations that apply to oil produced in Cook Inlet, gas produced in Cook Inlet, gas produced anywhere in the state, but delivered in the state for consumption as fuel. Those tax ceilings expire in 2022. So that's the reference. You have certain segments that have a tax ceiling that are just sunsetted in the current law.
That's current law. You're not changing anything with that.
That through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, that is correct. That's current law. That's not being changed.
Mr. Stedman.
As a point of clarification as we go forward, I think the issue brought up of 2022, I'd like to, you know, in your future, or ask the chairman to have you in the future presentations, to go back and look at why 2022 was in there. I think it had to do when we're dealing with Cook Inlet and the potential for a major gas line and some other issues going on. And we're reaching out in time, but to review that that policy, there seems to be a lot of the policy creep issues from Cook Inlet ring fencing, and then as we slowly expanded Cook Inlet North, some of the incentives, and now we're going to push them all the way to the North Pole. So we need to understand, you know, the history of some of this stuff. It's not by happen chance 2022 is in there.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, if I could. Have you given any thought to doing any ring fencing under your legislation of the legacy fields or other fields, or any thought to decoupling oil and gas?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilikowski, no, we have not at this point. It's certainly something, and I know I've had a few casual discussions with Senator Stedman, that's certainly something that if the committee brings up the discussion, we're certainly willing to have it, but it hasn't been a focus of the legislation as we tried to look at what we thought could increase. The focus was on what we could do to increase production, and that just wasn't an area that we focused on yet.
Senator Stedman.
I can't.
We were wondering.
I would like, Mr. Chairman, at least speaking as one member of the committee, for the committee to take a look at this issue, because it is so intertwined with what we're doing here. And gas is a big issue. So I think we would end up with a better final product by dealing with it, even though it would, you know, increase the complexity. But we're a complex committee anyway. And it does take a little bit of time, but we've all been at this committee, been around it quite a bit. I've also encouraged our other colleagues down the hall to take a look at that in the event that this committee decides to take action in that direction, that they're not caught, you know, unaware that it, because when you're first introduced to it, the complexity, it takes a little while to grasp the intricacies, because at first you would think it was just complete heresy that the mathematics would work that way against the state. So I would encourage the committee to take a look at that after we've had, you know, given the administration time to walk through what they've already put together. I got a list of several other little things too, Mr. Chairman.
No doubt in my mind on that. So please continue.
All right. And through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I'm not sure if this is direct towards your question, but this doesn't change. There are some specific rules that relate to lease expenditures for production that's subject to the tax ceilings, and that's also in Section 160, and this doesn't change any of that. You know, I'm not sure if your question was more related to lease expenditures or credits.
And actually, I guess the issue of lease expenditures is maybe another issue to add to the list of things to discuss, because how are the regulations going regarding the lease expenditures? There were supposed to be regulations enacted after ACES. Are those complete? Do we have the full ability to audit the lease expenditures? I know this was an issue in Senate Finance about where the credits are going.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I can't answer that. The lease expenditure regulations were, I believe, filed last January. How soon time passes, but most of the lease expenditure regulations are done. The main component is in 15 AAC 55, 250, and 260. And as far as I'm aware, I don't believe there's any hanging lease expenditure regulations that need to be completed.
No, not that I'm aware of. And through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, our master auditor who works on credits, Lenny Dees, is going to give a presentation next week. We're really going to have an opportunity to dig into the credits, what we know of them, what's happened, where we are, where we're going, and I think it'll be pretty enlightening.
All right, I will continue, and we are ready to move, I believe, to the next slide. We've covered the change of the progressivity to incremental brackets and the two conforming changes that go along that with that, which is Section 9 and Section 20 of the bill. The next major component of the bill is found in Section 6. If you were, that amends 4355-011E, which is where the production tax is levied. If you were to compare this section to the current Section E, there's not a lot of change in terms of, it's not like it's really expanded or contracted. The main change is that the tax is levied here, but that the entire tax, for the entire tax calculation, you look to subsection G as opposed to the current setup where your base rate for annual production tax values under 30 is listed in E, and the reason for that is because that was annual, whereas the progressivity was done on a monthly basis. So what we have here is what we're internally referring to as E1 production. That is oil and gas produced from a lease or property containing land as December 31st, 2010 was or had previously been within a unit or in commercial production would be subject to the current 25% rate plus the incremental progressivity in 011G1. The new fields production that would be subject to the 15% rate plus the progressivity in G2 is listed on your bill beginning on line 17 on page 3, and that is the E2 rate or the new fields rate.
If we could interject at this time, just so that there's an understanding with the viewing public, if there could be an explanation of the distinction between a parcel of land that is in classified as a unit and a parcel of land that is not classified as a unit, because that's the distinction in the tax. So if possibly that could be explained.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, the lease or property that contained land, it could not be in a unit, an area that had been unitized for production or be in commercial production prior to December 31st of 2010. And I don't have the technical wording in more detail than that. I know in the Resources Committee and the other body that we were in, we had Joe Balash come up and give kind of an 10 or 15 minute explanation of unitized and everything, and we'd be happy to do that as well if you think it would benefit the committee.
Senator Pascovin, I can not really answer that, but DNR was involved when we were figuring out the language for what would best implement the policy. So both lease or property and unit is defined within the production tax, and a unit would be like a state unit or a unit under federal land. There's an AOGCC one and an agreement between the parties unit, but yes. If we're going to get into details on units, it would be great to have a DNR person up here. Are there any questions about this particular section? So we're basically breaking the production into two basic tax rates, 25%, 15% based on timing of when the property was or had previously been within a unit or in commercial production.
Senator Steadman.
I'm sure, Mr. Chairman, as time goes on, we'll go into the justification of the 15% base tax. Versus some other number, 20% or 25% or 18%. Some of us have spent several years on this subject, and a few guys are even in federal prison over a rate at 20%, so I'm not too excited about 15, but we'll hear your argument.
Please continue.
I will. Okay, that is the technical walkthrough, basically, on those particular sections. So we've covered, I believe, four of the sections so far. The third major component of the bill, the policy direction, was to expand the 40% well lease expenditure credit to the North Slope. The well lease expenditure credit was added to Section 023 last year, I believe, in HB 280, which is the Quick Inlet Recovery Act. That bill had at first been directed just at Cook Inlet, but at the end, the well lease expenditure credit, which was intended to be a a 40% credit instead of a 20% credit for expenditures directly related to well work was extended to Cook Inlet as well as the land outside of Cook Inlet but south of 68 degrees north. The actual language of the credit remains exactly the same as was passed last year. The oh, and I didn't point out which section we're on today. Okay, sections 15 and 16. Sections, looks like section 15 begins at the bottom of page 10, and section 16 carries through to line 5 on page 12. So the format of the credit is not changed at all. Simply the language that would keep that credit out of North Slope is taken out. And that's all that's happening for that particular credit provision.
Has there been a calculation as to what that additional credit would amount to going forward?
Mr. Chairman, trying to estimate what that increased credit would do from what our estimates are for 2012, 2013, is that what you're asking?
What?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My deputy commissioner has pointed out that in the fiscal note, it's estimated to $400 million.
And if we is this on page 2 of 2 of the fiscal note, or
yes.
If you could point out precisely where that is so we can follow that.
It is number 6 on page 2 of 2, down near the bottom.
Senator Wilkowski.
Just following up on that, can you talk about how you came up with that estimate of $200 to $400 million annually?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, yeah, if I could ask Sherry Nienheist to come up here, who prepared the fiscal note for the department.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Sherry Nienheist. I'm a petroleum economist with the Department of Revenue. We have somewhat limited information from which to make that estimate. That's why we have a range. But we do have some forward-looking drilling cost estimates from operators because we do ask for projections. And because these are only a portion of drilling costs, these are the intangible drilling costs that would pertain to this credit, we estimated about 85% of what the drilling costs that we saw forward-looking and took those numbers and came up with what we would consider a pretty conservative estimate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did you base these numbers on what the producers told you they were already planning on drilling?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, it has that component to it. We also actually increased it slightly because we believe that actually we would see more drilling because of this provision.
This is the infield drilling on Prudhoe North.
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I think this would apply to any kind of drilling that has intangible drilling costs.
Have you run any numbers on internal rates of return for the infill drilling programs on the North Slope?
Senator Wilkowski, for the chair, not for this provision, no. We've done internal rates of return for various, modeling projects for you know, a field, what credits we'll do and that kind of thing. But for this particular credit, no, we did not.
Thank you.
Senator Stedman.
This begs the question, why not?
Senator Stedman, through the chair, we certainly could. We could definitely look at that. We have not, probably because we weren't looking at it necessarily on a project-type basis for this particular one. I think this credit would, it would extend to all projects, but in particular, I believe there's a lot of infill drilling in the current units in the larger legacy fields that this would apply to that would also... It would make it a hard thing to calculate, but we could look at that if you'd like.
Yes.
If I could, I think Daphne Klein, I think, is still employed by the administration. Mm-hmm. And you're one of your prime consultants here, and we have our own through legislative budget and audit. But it would be nice on this bill, and I'm sure in their presentation, if, and maybe they've already done this, take a look at some of these issues as far as the total credit impacts, the gold plating issue, rate of return issues. Some oil basins, their whole fiscal structure is on rate of return. So we could go in and measure these particular fields somehow. They can do some modeling and give us an idea. I'm not really clear conceptually how this would impact some of the whole investment stream until we, you know, take a look at all the stuff stacked together. And maybe Gaffney Klein has already done that, but also be interested in looking at and pay particular attention to the profit oil split, because that's ultimately what it comes down to, is what we're doing here. It's moving cash from the sovereign to the industry and the industry to the sovereign. And take a look at those, and then also get some idea of sensitivity issues. For instance, if we're looking at credit increases, base tax changes, the annual versus monthly, progressivity, the stepped issue versus a slope change. There's all kinds of ways we can try to create the all kinds of levers we can push to move that cash flow back and forth. But I'm concerned, and have been concerned since we started expanding credits, that the impact is huge when we start throwing credits into the mathematical modeling. And I'm not convinced that credits are the solution to the problem. In fact, I haven't even heard of the problem defined yet. That's probably for a future meeting. Well, if we're going to solve something, we should know what we're supposed to solve. And take it from there. And then after we, take a look at some of these presentations, we can go back and ask Gaffney Klein, our own consultants, to come in and take a look at some of this modeling and what's going on and the total impact.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, absolutely. Many of these things will be in our presentations, and we're certainly willing to model anything you asked us to do and get it in front of the committee.
Senator Wagner.
Yeah, I think I remember where the 40% credit in Cook Inlet came from. And I'm somewhat confused. I sat through too many meetings and too many bills dealing with these credits. Unlike Senator Stedman, we've got so many credits running around, it's hard to capture each one. But why, I don't know who wrote this bill, but I don't know why they take a 40% drilling credit out of Cook Inlet. And we were worried about gas in Cook Inlet, not oil, because we're about out of oil in Cook Inlet. That was put in Cook Inlet, I believe, to incentivize additional drilling and exploration for gas. And now we're taking it out of Cook Inlet, putting it on the North Slope, and applying it to infield drilling for oil. Whose idea was this?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wagner, I don't remember the name of the bill. The governor had a bill last year that had that this was the essence of that bill, and so that it was incorporated into the other issues that we were working on.
Thank you.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just following up on Senator Stedman, my recollection is, and Gaffney and Klein did actually prepare a model of the infield drilling at Prudhoe Bay, And I actually have a slide where they ran the numbers at $80 a barrel, 30, the current ACES structure, stressing the CapEx by 300%, and they came up with an internal rate of return of 123%. So if you could get us that model, I'm sure Gaffney and Klein has it. I think that might be very helpful for us and for the viewing public out there.
Sure.
If I could focus on this footnote 6 at page 2 of 2 of the fiscal note, and the phrase DOR has very limited data, if could you explain the context of that statement?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. When I say we have limited data, it's because we have forward-looking information from operators. And it sometimes is for 1 year, it sometimes for several years. And sometimes we get more detail than, you know, with some units than with other units. So when I say limited data, we can look at that information and sort of draw some conclusions, some assumptions from that, but it's not all encompassing. We don't have the, you know, the perfect forward looking information for every unit on the North Slope.
Senator Wilkowski.
Yes, thank you. And I know that your consultant, Mr. Ruggiero, has testified in the House that some Alaska has very limited data that we gather, particularly compared to other sovereign jurisdictions. And I know my office has asked you for several weeks now what you feel are the data gaps. I think it's an important piece of legislation that needs to be filed. And I'm just wondering when we might be able to get that from you.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. Senator Wilkowski, we have been working with DNR on a spreadsheet that shows where we believe the gaps are, what we're getting and what we're not getting, and we hope to have it to the committee by hopefully this week.
Please continue.
Okay, we left a little bit off on the well lease expenditure credit. I will just reiterate that this does not change the language from the credit that went into effect, I believe, for expenditures after July 1st, 2010. 10 or, yeah, I think because it was enacted in last year's legislative session. The effective date on this particular credit provision would be January 1st, 2012, and it would apply to expenditures after December 31st, 2011. If the credit is changed so that the well lease expenditure credit applies to expenditures north of 68 degrees, then there are conforming amendments that you'll see made to 4355028, which is the provision where you can get a cash refund for a credit for certain producers, just to reflect the change of the in the credit provisions and the repeal of 023M. And I'm going to go ahead and jump to the repeal of 023M.
We could just interject what I've forgot to announce. We have Senator Giesel has joined us, and also Representative Dugan is in the crowd, so I just wanted to identify those two elected officials that have joined this hearing. And Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just on the 40% number, my understanding is it's currently 20%, and you want to expand it to 40. And out, my understanding is it 3 miles outside of existing units that it jumps up to 40?
Not for this particular credit. Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I think you're referring to the alternate tax credit for expiration in 025, unless I'm misunderstanding your question, because there are distance limits between what amount of a credit you get under Section 025, which people generally refer to as expiration credit because it basically just covers expiration. The credits under Section 023, which is where this well lease expenditure is, don't have the distance limitations that you see in Section 025 for the expiration tax credit.
So, yeah, so currently the law is 20, it's the tax credit under Section 15 and 16 is currently 20%. Or is this a tax credit that exists only in Cook Inlet right now? Or south of the 68th degree latitude?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, it's currently south of 68 degrees north latitude, and this would just expand it to the whole state.
Okay. And then, if I could, Mr. Chair, how effective is that 40% tax credit? How is that working south of 68 degrees?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, since the bill just passed last session and has been in law less than 1 year, we don't have we're hearing a lot of information about companies interested, and certainly the other bill that passed having to do with the 100%, 90%, 80% of drilling reimbursements plays a major role in that as well. But all we've heard is anecdotally at this point. It's been too new of a law to be able to point definitively and say it led to this.
Just as a general basis, is the $200 million to $400 million then, for example, if this were in existence today, it would be in addition to the approximate $850 million in gross credits for fiscal 12 that's being projected?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, although we did, as Ms. Nienheis said, ratchet it up a little bit with the expectation that there would be more spending as a result of this.
Thank you. Senator French.
Well, the question does bring up a more general sort of large issue question. Maybe we'll get to it Friday, but I'll ask you now, and we can discuss it when you're ready. But it's sort of like the theory behind the bill is what? You reduce taxes, and you get more exploration that leads to more oil production that leads to eventually more tax income, or do we just sort of give that away in the interest of an operating pipeline and more jobs?
Through the chair, Senator French, kind of two pieces to that. One piece is we will be presenting reinvestment scenarios that will give you an idea of what amount of reinvestment would need to occur and what that level of production we believe would then result. We'll have charts that'll show when we kind of get back to zero, as it were, to make up for the short-term loss in revenue. But the second, I mean, that's just the work we're doing, speculating where we believe this is going to go. The second piece of that, and what the governor has emphasized when he's discussed the bill, is up to the industry. And they will be in front of the committee, I would assume, at some point. And, you know, they also have a role in telling you as legislators what, if they think this is material, and where they think, what they think this will result in the future. And that has to be a convincing case, too. We can and we will be laying out where we are, where we think we can improve, what we think the bill will do, and where we think it goes. But that's only one part of it. The second part of it is the industry.
Senator Stedman.
I mean, when we do this data gathering, maybe I can get you to gather up maybe the last 7 years back up before PPT, and not just discretionary, but all of the revenue from royalties, the base tax, progressivity, property tax, income tax. So we take a look at the entirety of revenue to the state from the oil industry in those sections, because I think it's an interesting little factoid that in the 12 budget, I think you have, what, $860 million in credits and $700 million in progressivity. So the industry net wouldn't pay any progressivity?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I don't know. I don't have in front of me specifically what those numbers are, but I know I've talked to the chairman, and we will be providing a comparison, very similar to what you're asking for, of credits and progressivity, so you can see on a year-to-year basis, not necessarily how they coordinate, but how they correlate.
Right, and I think, Mr. Chairman, the reason I ask that is just looking at the 12 budget in the revenue source book,
and you know, if we don't have the ability to go down and look in individual companies. We have to look at the across the basin as a whole. But across the basin as a whole, there's zero projected progressivity to be paid. But progressivity is, frankly, one of the key issues, although I haven't heard the argument of what's wrong yet, but formally at the committee. But I think that's the issue on the table in front of us is the splitting of the profit oil at high oil prices. And right. Some feel that it's not fair. You know, the sovereign takes too much. So we're in this discussion. But when we go from the broader view of 800 and take out Cook Inlet, because that's what's 60 million in credits, you got 800 million in credits and 12, 700 million in progressivity coming in, the problem is down underneath who's paying what. So we need to try to drill down in and frankly ask the industry, the players, what are they investing in up there, and what is generating these credits, and try to sort that out, because we don't have that information.
Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you. We've heard certainly read articles and heard people saying that hundreds of millions of dollars in tax credits we're giving aren't leading to any more exploration or any more drilling. What makes you think that if we increase the credits to 40%, that will lead to any additional drilling?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilkowski, I think that this is a piece of kind of a larger view of how we're looking at it. I think that a lot of the credits in ACES, and I think you'll have when you talk to when the industry discusses it, when the independents discuss it, I think you're going to hear stories similar to what we've heard, which is there have been companies coming in and have explored over the last few years and excited about the credits that got them here. But when it got to the point of trying to find partners, deeper pocketed partners, to move it to a development and then a production unit, that's where, and that's what we believe is a progressivity piece, that's where they've been dealing with the lack of being able to find partners to that. So there are many different pieces. The credits are certainly for exploration, but ultimately you can explore and you can find oil, but if you're not a large enough company and you can't find the partners to produce that oil, you end up walking away from it, which a few companies have done.
Senator McGuire and then Senator French.
Thank you, and through the chair, and this is a great dialogue. And Commissioner Butcher, with your background, both from having been finance side, both bodies, tremendous background, AHFC, complex financing, gas line experience, now here you are in the position. I think what you're hearing from the committee and what we're trying to do in finance is look at a 35,000-foot view as opposed to just tweaking the tax code one more time to say what's really happening on the ground. We had one goal in mind, another goal in mind. Obviously, some people are benefiting and some people are not. So if there's a way for the department using its sophisticated analysts or whether it's using our private contractors to break down exactly what you're saying, so it's clear that the explorers are benefiting. What credits are they using? How much have they used? For those who actually produce, at that point in the production, are there any credits that are benefiting them? It appears to me that what's happening is those who are in a position to produce are, in fact, using credits for things like maintenance. And, in fact, when you look at what the new jobs that have been created on the North Slope, which are very few, they've gone toward those types of jobs. And that what you're seeing when people do talk very realistically about the job loss on the North Slope, it is in a lot of the contractors, the third-party contractors, where new development production type activity takes place. So I think there is a disconnect. And so our office is working right now on a host of things. I know all the offices are working on it, but, you know, I'm leaning in favor of, you know, looking at our credits right now and wiping away some of the ones we have and gearing them more toward you get them when you produce. And that's the benefit for Alaska. It's a partnership. And we don't hand out money until we see it come in. And frankly, that's what we did in the renewable energy sector. When we sat down in our big bill and looked at what kind of credits we were going to give in the renewable energy, we said they're going to be production-based credits. We might partner with you in some places in the exploratory phase because of the high-risk nature of Alaska, but really, in the end, we want to see a product come out of it. We want to see an energy resource. So I guess what I would like to see from the department is partnering with this committee, an analysis of where the credits have been used, what that dollar figure is out of the $3 billion that Senator Stedman refers to, where have they been spread out, what would it look like if we change that mixture. And I agree, I'm not so keen about taking the 40% well lease expenditure credit that we carved out for the inlet and then extended to the Nana Basin and then just applying it on the North Slope. I don't know that that does that. I don't think that that gets at what we're looking at. We need to fill up the Trans-Alaska pipeline.
If we could just take a brief at ease, we need to do a brief. On record, so just correcting that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator McGuire, when our credit expert gives his presentation next week, you're going to learn everything we know, which is a lot more than we knew pre-PPT, but as I'm sure you've if you read the ACES report and, you know, any of the House version of this bill that we've discussed, we don't know as much as we would like to know. Since I've had this job, I found out that a lot of that, most of it, all of it just about, that we would like to know, we can get the information statutorily, we just haven't put the regs out to get it. So that's something that we are working on very actively right now, and that goes to what Senator Wilikowski is asking for, which is the sheet, not just from DOR, but DNR, of the issues, what we're getting and what we're not getting, and trying to figure that out. And I certainly invite the legislature or your staff to participate in that process as we develop those regulations, because we know that we can get the information. It's just a matter of getting it in a regulation form where the industry understands what it is they need to get to us.
Senator Wagner.
Can we go back and talk about item number six on the second sheet of the fiscal note again? I'm just curious where that $200 million to $400 million spread you have there came from and how that came about. How many, for instance, how many wells were drilled on North Slope last year? Any idea?
Yeah,
160, 170?
Paperwork
infield?
Please identify yourself, and if you may, respond to Senator Wagner's question.
Yes, Sherry Nienheis with the Department of Revenue, Petroleum Economist. Senator Wagner, through the chair, I don't have the number of wells drilled, although we have presented that in some of the committees, and we could certainly present it again. More than the number of wells drilled, what I was looking at were actually expenditures, planned expenditures. And adding to that a little bit, the planned expenditures being mostly towards drilling or well work. Not every company, not every producer defines or uses the same term for what they plan to do. So it was more of a nature of going through what are their expenditure projections were going to be, try and identify the ones that pertain to drilling. And then actually I worked with Lenny Dees, who has a better industry experience than I do, because I have none. But he said that typically somewhere in the neighborhood of 75 to 85% of drilling costs are intangible. So I applied the higher of those two. I applied 85% and believe I came up with a pretty conservative range on that.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Wilikowski.
Well, I think Senator McGuire did a good job summarizing what my thoughts, but I'll just say if, and I heard Rich Ruggiero's testimony on the House side, he said our tax credits were some of the best in the world. So I don't know for exploration. So I don't know that increasing tax costs, tax credits in that area is the way to go. And then when we see a company like Repsol coming in and spending $768 million, I mean, we are seeing that loop closed, in my opinion. So I'll be very interested to hear next week when we talk about the credits and where they're all going and if they're working.
Thank you.
Okay, I will try to move on here. Since we're on credits, let me just summarize. The only changes in SB 49 happen in 4355023, which is says tax credits for certain losses and expenditures. I think of it as the capital credits provision. I'm not sure if Mr. Dees will use that same term when he discusses it next week. The main components in the bill to pay attention to, first of all, we've already dealt with the 40% expansion of the 40% credit to the North Slope. The second main component is when Section 023 was enacted in 2006, it did not have the language in it that required that credits be what they call split over 2 years. That language was added in ACES, and my recollection from the legislative history was that was more of a reactive addition as opposed to something proactive. There was concern, perhaps, that with some of the changes in ACES, they weren't sure about what was going to happen with some of the credits. So there was this idea that if you had a credit certificate, you could only apply half of it in 1 year. So another important component of the governor's bill here is to remove that requirement that credits have to be split over 2 years. I believe the revenue fiscal note just mentions that in the first year, then you would see credits applied in 1 year. From a legal view, that would be fine. It would remove a little bit of an administrative tangle that's caused now between some credits having to be split and some not, particularly in conjunction with 023M, which is a provision related to the well lease expenditure credit. So some credits that occur either in the outside of Cook Inlet and below the slope are not split, whereas credits that are incurred on the slope, the certificates are still split. So between sections 11, 12, 14, and 24 of the bill, that would all be cleaned up and credits would be issued as one. The effective date for all of those, it would be January 1st, 2012. So they would just muddle through this year with the split and non-split issue.
I think this is an important point also to make in following what Senator Steadman said earlier. It would be nice to hear the policy reasons why the split occurred initially and then what the policy arguments that are being advanced now as to why it should be changed. So I think that in all of these areas, it's important to know what happened yesterday so we can, if necessary, make better policy decisions now.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Then are there any questions about the credit certificates? And these are the transferable credits. They don't expire, so that's part of the reason for not having a split, because somebody could have five credits and use them.
Senator Steadman has a question.
Just on the last page of the fiscal note, just because we're just in the first day of the bill, and help me with the
third paragraph, or the middle paragraph, when it talks about the North Slope producers receive a 20% qualified capital expenditure credit for well expenditure. And then under the amendments provided in 15-16, producers will receive a 40% credit for those expenditures. Can you give me the idea of the could you help clarify that? I'm a little confused. Are we taking, we're not taking the 20 to the 40.
To the chair, Senator Stedman, you were referring to the fiscal note, is that right?
Right, last page of the fiscal note. Okay. Fiscal note number two, last page, center paragraph.
Page 2 of 2.
Yes. That's on the one prepared by Kevin Banks.
Yeah. I'm not on the right fiscal note.
Yes.
All right, what I'm looking at right now is fiscal note number 2, page 2 of 2, and the paragraph starts, in addition to allowing quicker monetization. Okay.
Correct.
Okay, this is, are you asking whether there, this is, how this fits into the governor's bill or which section?
Right, I mean, is it, okay. Where I read that, and look, are we taking the 20% qualified capital expenditure credit? Wellhead expenditure capital up to 40?
Not all. To the chair, Senator Stedman, I'm sorry, were you done? Or is
I'm just asking what's a, help me clarify the, what I'm reading here.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, this could almost be read as if all of your qualified capital expenditure credits on the North Slope would qualify for the 40%. Mm-hmm. And that's not correct. Only the capital expenditures that would qualify for the well lease expenditure credit, which is specifically defined in subsection L. We've mentioned a couple of times, I believe Sherry mentioned the intangible drilling costs.
So just the way it's written.
That's right. I think. If I understood.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, we'll talk to Kevin Banks and get clarification on that.
Please continue.
All right, there's just three more main subjects. Section 7 of the bill provides for some changes to the minimum tax. Section 7 is on page 3. Starts on line 20. You also see section... This is the minimum tax that only applies to North Slope production. What happens is you compare the gross production tax value based on the threshold percentages here, which goes from 4 to 0%, with the tax on North Slope that you would calculate under whatever bracket you're under, the 25% or the 15% bracket. And you'll see that comparison happening on page 6 of the bill from lines 10 through 29. What this does is lower the threshold of the ANS price at which the North Slope, which the North Slope minimum applies. So it would broaden the price ranges at which the taxpayer would have to make that comparison.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. Has this section ever applied during the life of ACES?
Through the chair, yeah, Senator Wilkowski, your question is, has somebody had to pay tax under the minimum? I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I don't believe the price of oil has been low enough for the minimum to kick in.
And just, if I could, Mr. Chair, when my recollection of ACES was, when the governor first came out with her bill, she had a gross floor, and industry really hated that. They didn't like that at all because that affected their margins. And so the policy call that we made at that time was to remove the significant gross floor in her bill, but then take more at the high end. This was at a time when we didn't know if oil was going to be $30 a barrel or $150 a barrel. And we had a spike in oil at the time we passed it, but that was the policy decision we made. We gave up the gross at the bottom with the understanding we were going to take more at the top. And so now we're giving up more at the top where we're currently at and where we're projected to be, but in exchange for something where realistically we're never going to be?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, Sherry pointed out to me that anytime we get over, we're always under the minimum tax. So technically, it always applies. But because we're at a dollar amount much above this, I think the question you're asking is, do we ever fall into a period where this applies and not the base and the progressivity? And you're correct, that has not occurred.
Isn't the concern in part that the credits are so large that at these hypothetically low prices, they overwhelm, I mean, just so overwhelm the progressivity that this is like an alternative minimum tax then?
Mr. Chairman, no, that's not how I have heard it described. This was just as we move down the high end and basically kind of plateaued it more than the current progressivity, we just gave ourselves a little bit in the bill, a little bit more production, or a little bit more protection on the bottom end. Senator Wilikowski makes the point that it's unlikely to get to this point, but of course none of us have a crystal ball.
All right, we're moving on to the next slide, which is we've moved on from minimum tax on the North Slope to there are approximately 8 sections of the bill that deal with interest rate amendments. I think we can move to 12. Thanks. And this is the only section of the bill that affects a non-production tax area because this is the interest rate that would apply to both delinquent taxes and to the situations where the state might have a refund obligation for an overpayment of the tax. Section 3 on page 2 of your bill shows the main change. The current interest rate is 5 percentage points above the annual rate charged for advances by the 12th Federal Reserve, or 11%, whichever is greater. So we've been at 11% for a while. This effectively lowers it to 3% above the Federal Reserve, the 12th Federal Reserve rate, or 11%, whichever is lesser. And it would apply basically to most tax types. The ones that would not apply to are specifically detailed in the bill, such as Section 1, which is something about delinquent gambling fees or permitting fees, Section 2, which refers to a statute that refers to unclaimed property. But you'll see a variety of conforming amendments just where the interest rate is mentioned.
Senator Wilikowski.
And if I recall correctly, I think the policy call behind this was there was a feeling that we were going to have a hard time with the accounting, and we wanted to have a big stick and say, you know, we want you to be straight with us and give us your payments on time, and if you're not, you're going to get whacked. So I'd be interested to hear, you know, whether you think that policy has changed. I know we've had some testimony from previous people about we haven't completed all the audits under ACES, and I'm just wondering how much in delinquent taxes and refunds has there been?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we can bring Lenny Dees up to speak to that in just a moment, but I can give you our rationale behind it, which is an interest rate that goes both ways. If it's underpaid, they have to pay us this. If it's overpaid, the state has to pay us this. And it seemed excessively high, not just to us in looking at having to deal with it, but we had heard from the industry that it was as well. And it's certainly a conversation that we're willing to have about what might be the exact point. We feel comfortable with this, but would you like to come up, Lenny, and kind of deal with the second part of Senator Wilikowski's question?
There's about 4 more pages. Do we want to just stop it?
Go on for hours.
Mr. Chair, if I could, I don't want to take. I know we're pushing 5 o'clock. If we could just get a rough number of what the delinquent taxes and refunds has been.
Hi, my name is Lenny Dees, and I'm audit master with the Department of Revenue. I don't have that number for you today, but we can definitely go back and do some research on that. But it cuts both ways from what I've seen. We've had situations where we've had refunds and additional tax due. So.
All right, we will, it is 5 o'clock now, so I think this seems to me to be a good point to break for the day. I do appreciate the knowledge and expertise and history that my fellow committee members do bring to this debate. And so, you know, I just want to acknowledge that and the questions and advice that has been provided is very valuable. Are there any questions that anyone has at this time?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, can we go back to simple gross tax system?
You better adjourn quickly.